Dr. Paulina Sliwa is a philosopher at Cambridge University. Her main interests are in ethics and moral epistemology. The conversation we're going to have with her today isn't that lofty, though, even though it's in the Journal of Philosophy and Public Affairs. It's about the excuses we use that work and those that don't. Very, very handy in both professional and domestic situations. Which of these would you find acceptable?
Oh, sorry I was late for the meeting. I was so overwhelmed this morning by the enormity of global warming that I couldn't bring myself to use my car. I'm sorry I told your boyfriend you were flirting in the pub the other night with someone else. I just believe in being completely open and honest. I can't come into work today. My husband had a dream last night that I would be taken to hospital after someone on a scooter ran into me. I can't come and pick you up, sorry. There's a big spider somewhere in the lounge and I have to find it now or I'll be too scared to come home later.
According to a Career Builder survey, 40% of workers internationally took a fake sick day during the last 12 months, up from 35% the previous year. Good excuses include car troubles, a plumbing emergency and a sick child. Poor excuses are losing your phone and being hungover. We all use excuses. Dr. Pauline Sliwa, good morning.
Good morning.
Your paper is called The Power of Excuses. Why did you want to study this, please?
I think excuses are just a really fascinating phenomenon because they are so common. We all make them all the time. But when you think about it, they're so puzzling, in part because they're just all these different considerations that, you know, we sometimes recognize as an excuse, but they are very, very different. Like coercion or duress is very different from being stressed at work or from having a headache. And yet somehow we all seem to recognize these as excuses. So that's kind of what piqued my interest to begin with.
Okay, so why I'm late for work, why I forgot to phone you, why I cheated on you, why I'm going to vote for Boris Johnson, the whole gamut of excuses, that's what you're looking at. All manner of excuses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're interested, I think, in the morality of excuses, when they are permissible or seem permissible and when not, really.
Yeah.
And your research is a unified account, as academics say, of excuses, and I don't think anyone's quite done this before. So what separates the good excuses from the bad ones?
When you make an excuse, you're basically saying three things. You acknowledge that you did screw up. You know, things did not go as they should have gone. But, and that's the second claim you make, your intention, that was a sound, it was a morally adequate plan. And insofar as things went wrong, it's not because the plan was not adequate. It's because of other considerations that were outside of your control.
Understood. Nevertheless, the road to hell is, as they say, paved with good intentions. So we sense the morality, the underlying morality, but it can still get complicated when we decide whether we accept the excuse or not, can't it?
That's right. And I think that's the difficulty, is to, you know, to establish when you make the excuse that your plan really was adequate, you know, because after all, things did go wrong. And an adequate plan makes some provisions, usually, for at least some of the foreseeable things that can go wrong along the way.
It doesn't entirely simplify matters, does it? I'm late for work because I've got a terrible migraine or my child's sick, and we all understand that. But then excuses get more and more complicated, don't they? Not when we sense the other person is lying, but when we have to weigh up the morality of what they're telling us. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, evaluating an excuse, so figuring out whether it's a good one, that part of what that takes is moral judgment, and that's often tricky.
I'm late because I stopped to make sure a small child was okay when I saw her fall off her bike. You know, there's nothing but good intentions in that. How about I'm late because my mother, who can't afford an expensive appointment with an oncologist, has asked me to stop off at the casino and put her last $50 on number 20 on the roulette table. I mean, this is shades of grey start to appear here.
Yeah, that's right.
Professor J. Wallace, who you've mentioned in your writings, he was at Canterbury University here for a while. In his book, Responsibility and the Moral Sentiments, famously argued, I think, that we should hold people responsible for all their choices and actions and blame those actions that offend against our norms, even if, you know, determinism is true. You don't go that far, though, I don't think.
I think I go some of the way. So, and that's because I think that excuses never get you off the hook entirely, right? Excuses merely mitigate your blame. So at best, they bear on what kind of apology you owe. They bear on whether you owe something more than apology, like a compensation, or, you know, how elaborate an explanation you owe. And I think we have a kind of shared understanding of what kind of considerations make for good excuses and which ones don't.
I think Jay Wallace argued for exemptions using a principle of reasonableness, which we can understand pretty easily. But how reasonable do you think, Paulina, is, say, extreme stress when your own previous neglect of work-life balance may have created the stress? I mean, how reasonable is addiction as an excuse when your drinking makes you late for work or makes you pick a fist fight with someone? These start to get into tricky areas too.
Right. And I think these start to get us into tricky areas kind of precisely because, you know, they put pressure on, they kind of call into question to what extent your plans for action really were adequate, right? Because, I mean, so take something perhaps even less complicated, like habitual lateness. If I know I'm habitually late, it's kind of my responsibility to make sure that I leave the house on time, whether it means hiding the alarm clock somewhere inconvenient in my bedroom so I have to get to it, or, you know, or taking an earlier train or something like this.
Yeah. You see, you're writing, I think, a book about moral knowledge with the working title I saw online, Telling Right from Wrong.
Mm-hmm.
To give you an example, here they've banned single-use plastic bags in supermarkets, you know, to cut down on our use of plastic. What about a moral stance where I say to myself, I'll keep using them because I believe they're doing this because they're afraid to tackle the real issues arising from the use of hydrocarbons. You know, this is just low-hanging fruit and I don't believe in doing, I think they're not really trying, it's hypocrisy, etc. Is that a good excuse or a bad excuse? Is that the right moral decision? Or should I also join the crowd and stop using single-use plastic bags myself? There are all sorts of shades of grey in these kinds of considerations too.
As we make excuses, I think we do have to remember, though, that, you know, we are quite good at trying to justify to ourselves the course of action that is most convenient to us in the end. You know, so if there's a rule, you know, if there's a policy in place that is thought through and so and justified, you know, you better think really carefully if you do have an excuse for making an exception for yourself.
I know, but you could be the one person with virtue standing up against tyranny, which is the, you know, the serious side of all this. So what kinds of excuses have you used? I mean, I don't know if you can think of your own excuses in recent times, but can you think of ones that you have used which you think are sufficiently virtuous to appeal to other people and perhaps ones that haven't?
I mean, having had a baby, now she's, you know, starting school, so she's grown up. But I think when you have a newborn, certainly that provides with a lot of excuses. And I tend to think they are good ones, simply because a baby is impossible to plan for or to make provisions for. You are just completely at its mercy at the end of the day.
It's funny you mentioned children, because children are a completely legitimate excuse, but then later on, or in the course of raising them, we tend to use them as excuses for all sorts of things. I mean, an obvious one is when we don't feel like going out of an evening, and it's always incredibly useful to invoke
the presence of a child. And they actually cop a lot of our excuses, or, you know, generate a lot of them, don't they?
Yeah, I think that's true.
There'll be people listening who ask or are thinking, do we need to use philosophy to ascertain what are right and wrong reasons for failure to perform most of the time? Is this a case of studying the obvious a bit too closely? What do you think?
I mean, it is studying the obvious in some sense, right? But I do think philosophy has some tools to kind of to bring to the table. Philosophy is really good at challenging some kind of common mundane thoughts that we might have about excuses which turn out to be wrong.
Yeah, philosophical thinking doesn't have to have an IQ of 170 attached. But what are mundane rationalizations that we use as excuses that turn out to be wrong?
Being busy is one that we probably invoke a lot more than we should, because in the end of the day, you know, everyone is busy. That's one that I'm quite skeptical of.
That rings an instant chime of guilt in many of us, I am sure. But yeah. Can we actually blame society for that now? Or is that illusory, do you think? Because I hear the busyness excuse, and I also offer it a lot of the time. And I wonder if, in fact, those of us who do work, for example, who do have to hold down a job, are simply busier and busier and busier.
Yeah, that could be part of it. I mean, society sets up certain structures. There's certain pressures we're under, as you say, work, or for some people it's other pressures like poverty or unemployment or illness or inadequate healthcare. And so that's where like the interesting questions come in about, should we really blame the individual here, or to what extent should we blame those structural forces that simply constrain the individual so that it can be much harder for them to do what they should do, to do what they ought to do?
Speaking of structural forces, I was just hearing you articulate that, and I thought, wouldn't that be an amazing slogan for a political party? No excuses.
Yeah.
Well, they don't live by their slogan, so it makes no real difference. So why do you think the interest in this paper of yours, possibly you published it and thought, my colleagues are going to read this, and now, of course, the world's media have picked it up. Is it simply that we all use excuses and we're curious?
I think that's part of it, yes. There's a lot of academic work, and particularly a lot of philosophical work, that deals with questions that are really, really abstract. And here, it just happens to be a topic that we're all invested in, because we all make excuses and we like to think that the ones that we make are good ones.
Are you any good, or are you any better, do you think, than the rest of us at assessing the validity or morality of excuses? If I gave you the four that we asked the listeners about before you came on, would you give an opinion on each one, whether it was a good enough excuse?
I can try. I mean, it's a tricky thing to do without, you know, knowing, I think, you know, without knowing the context and without knowing the person who's offering the excuse.
True. All right.
But I can give you my rough judgment if you want to.
Okay. The first one is, I'm sorry I was late for the meeting. I was so overwhelmed this morning by the enormity of global warming that I just couldn't bring myself to use my car today. Told you they
were
hard. All right.
Yeah.
I'll ask you the next one. I'm sorry I told your boyfriend you were flirting in the pub the other night with someone else. I just believe in being completely open and honest.
That's not a great one in general, right? Because you can believe in being honest and open without believing that you have to volunteer every single bit of information that is true.
Two more. I can't come into work today. My husband had a dream last night that I'd be taken to hospital after someone on a scooter ran into me, so I'm afraid to come outside. That's an interesting one.
Oh, so I couldn't go outside.
Yeah, my husband had this dream. He said I'd be taken to hospital. Someone would run into me on a scooter.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see. And you took that as a prophecy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's a terrible excuse.
Is it? All right.
I think so, yeah.
And the last one, I can't come and pick you up. I'm sorry, there's a big spider somewhere in the lounge and I have to find it now or I'll be too scared to come home later.
I very much sympathize with that excuse.
All right. So that's the one.
I still don't think it's a particularly good one. There are ways of dealing with that spider later.
Dr. Pauline Sliwa, thank you very much for your time and talking to us.
Oh, thank you. That was a real pleasure.
Pauline Sliwa.